take it for granted that in the spiritual world, human men were also pleasantly scented. Indeed, the entire atmosphere became very pleasant due to Lord Vrishabhadeva's stool and urine. So, Omagada Timurada Shag and Anjana Shulakaya Chakshur and Medikam Yena Tesmai Shigurave Namaha. Of course, it's obvious that the stool and urine in this material world is pretty obnoxious. So sometimes I've been visiting people in like these extended care homes. I don't know if you've ever been into an extended care home. That means where, of course, there's a lot of old people, but also there's younger people, but people who either have some can't take care of themselves for one reason or the other. I mean, a physical malady, or sometimes they have this thing called Alzheimer's disease, or something comes through old age where they can't remember or take care of themselves. Anyway, so they have these extended care homes, and then you walk through the halls, and it really is bad. I mean, you just want to, throw up, basically speaking. Because basically people are what's called incontinent. There's that fancy word. That means they can't control. Anyway, you understand what. I'm not even going to talk about it. So it's very bad smell, and it's very polluting. And also we have a lot of diseases in the world are caused by inadequate sanitation in different countries. Like in India, there's many, many diseases because people don't have adequate sanitation facilities. They don't have toilets. Or at least they don't even have outhouses. They just go to the fields and pass stool, and then the water is washing that and goes into the rivers, and the rivers get polluted. Even the Yamuna River, of course, is all Delhi sewerage. It's coming from Delhi. And even the Ganges recently, turned out, the people have the highest rate of cancer practically anywhere in the world. People live along the banks of the Ganges and go swimming in the Ganges. So, I mean, the Ganges is pure, but the other things that are floating in it are not. Just like there can be a dead body floating in the Ganges, it's not because the dead body floating is floating in the Ganges that it's pure. There's a dead body. And so there's chemicals mixed in the Ganges water, and there's other things mixed in the Ganges water. So it's anyway, so I don't want to get into the whole thing, but it's very impure. And even apart from stool and urine, which we don't like to talk about, Bhagavatam class, these bodies are extremely impure, and they smell bad. And there's all sorts of industries and antiperspirants, antideodorants, perfumes that people have to put on their bodies. Actually, perfumes, as I mentioned before in the past, perfumes actually came from France originally because people wouldn't take a bath all winter long. I mean, it sounds funny, but I experienced that too. When I was a young man, I went to France. And I stayed at a nice hotel in, where is it? Oh, Marseille. Marseille is in France, if you didn't know that. And I went in my room and I was looking for the shower or the bath or something like that. And I said, where's the shower? And I went down. Way là-bas, whatever it is, shower. I forget the word for shower in French. But I used to speak French. And I said, where is it? And they said, it's in the basement. So I went down to the basement of this nice hotel, and there was one of these old-style tubs with legs on them. I don't know if you've ever seen that. And there was like a hose attached to it. And so I turned on. I thought, I want to take a bath, At least I had some training, even for my Jewish mother, that you're supposed to take a bath every day. So I turned it on, and this rusty water came out, and I could understand they hadn't used it for quite some time. So that's where perfume came from, because basically, you don't take a bath, you need to do something. So, without grossing everybody out further, The point is that these bodies, they really smell bad because basically there's all sorts of obnoxious substances in them. Now, even if you go to the heavenly planets, the bodies in the heavenly planets don't smell bad. It's described that the heavenly society girls, their bodies are also fragrant for many, many yojanas. A yojana, of course, sometimes taken as 8 miles or 10 miles, depending on your calculation. So even in the heavenly planets, it's like that. And so what to speak of the spiritual world, it's like that. But a devotee's body also becomes transformed. And a devotee's consciousness becomes transformed. And I'll explain one after the other. Let's take the story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami had, he was going to Jagannath Puri and he proceeded through the forest, the Jarakanda forest, which is the same place where Lord Chaitanya made the lions and tigers and deer and everybody else dance and chant. Anyway, so he's going through there. He didn't eat adequately, take care of himself. So he came up with some sort of disease where there were sores all over his body and there was pus coming out. I mean, it's quite, for most of us, that would be quite disgusting to see pus coming out of the body. You wouldn't be able to do deity worship, I don't think, if you had like that. So anyway, so he came up with these sores and he arrived in Jagannath Puri and he was feeling really remorseful because he was thinking, now I'm cannot go in to see the temple of Lord Jagannath. Of course, he couldn't anyway because he was considered impure, having associated in a very intimate way with the Muslim government, who was considered he had lost his caste, even though he was born in a very high Saraswati Brahmin family. So he was lamenting like that. He said, I can't even go near Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of these sores. But much to his dismay, when he came to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forcibly embraced him. And, you know, he was completely upset about that, and so much upset that he was getting ready to commit suicide. He thought, well, the best way to commit suicide is just to wait till Rath Yatra and to go under the wheel of the cart of Lord Jagannath. Some people do that. Actually, it's not mentioned in the Shastras that you go back to Godhead by doing that. I mean, if you could, you know, it's a good idea. We'd all give you all one-way trips to Jagannath Puri and then back to home, back to Godhead. It doesn't work like that. And which was mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew, because he's the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul in everyone's heart, he actually knew what Sanatana Goswami was thinking, and he went to Sanatana Goswami and said, if I thought I could go back to Godhead, basically, or achieve Krishna consciousness by committing suicide, I'd be prepared to give up this body millions of times. And so he said, suicide is an act in the mode of ignorance. And he also said to Sanatana Goswami, first of all, your body doesn't belong to you. It's not your prerogative to kill yourself. The body belongs to The body actually belongs to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, belongs to God. It's interesting. We were just reading about this in Prabhupada's books and the Krishna book. It was interesting discussion about who does the body belong to. And actually, sometimes it's described the body belongs to the person who feeds it. So I was thinking, like, because we feed so many devotees here, then the body belongs. Anyway, everybody belongs to us. Anyway, that was interesting. But obviously the body belongs to the material nature. That was the ultimate conclusion. And of course the material nature belongs to Krishna. So, I mean, logically, this body doesn't belong to us. So Sanatana Goswami was told this by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, also, I have many things to accomplish in Vrindavan, using your body as one of my instruments, and so you don't have that right. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this to Haridas Thakur. He said, my dear Haridas, what do you think of someone who wants to destroy another's property? It's an interesting statement. What do you think of someone? So, you know, it was a, sort of a joking thing with Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami didn't commit suicide, obviously. And then Lord Chaitanya kept embracing. And then finally, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tested Sanatana Goswami by calling him when it was a very warm day and there was only two ways to go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One way was by the in front of the Singha Dwara gate of the Jagannath Temple. Singha Dwara means the lion gate. And the other way was through the beach where was the hot sand. You know, hot sand can burn your feet. So Sanatana Goswami took the beach way because he was afraid of passing in front of the Singha Dwara gate because there were many servants of Lord Jagannath that were coming and going. He didn't want to contaminate them. And in doing so, he actually burnt his feet. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this and he was very pleased that Sanatana Goswami took that austerity. Although Sanatana Goswami didn't even notice that his feet were burnt because he was very enthusiastic to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, so then Sanatana Goswami, there's another exchange where Sanatana Goswami was lamenting that, you know, why I'm just committing offenses here with my sores. And Jagannanda Pandit advised Sanatana Goswami, you should go to Vrindavan, you know, right after Ratha Yatra, you won't be committing any more offenses. And Lord Chaitanya got angry at Jagannanda Pandit. He said, this Jagga is just a young boy, and Sanatana, you're on the level of my spiritual master. You can advise even me. And of course, then Sanatana Goswami said, I can see Jagannanda Pandit has an intimate relationship with you because you chastise him, and me, you're just giving me the bitter nimber fruit of sweet words, you know, praise. But generally, when you praise someone, I mean, sometimes we praise someone and it's really, you know, they deserve it. And sometimes you praise someone just because they couldn't take any other type of instruction. Or you may give, you can be sarcastic, like Lord Chaitanya did. When a devotee didn't do adequate cleaning of the Gundicha temple, he said, you have done a very good job. You know, it's a little sarcastic stuff. So anyway, so Sanatana Goswami was feeling so bad that he was committing his offenses. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eventually revealed to Sanatana Goswami. He said, first of all, if I discriminated between the, let's say, the bad smells and the good smells of this world, or the positive or negative things in this world, I wouldn't be qualified as a sannyasi. Because a sannyasi is samadarshi. He's supposed to see everything equal. Pebbles, stones, gold, everything equal. Well, actually for me, gold is not equal, but gold is nicer. But anyway, so, but a sannyasi is supposed to be equal poise like that. He's not supposed to be attracted to the beautiful things. Like if he sees a beautiful sunset, he's not supposed to think that's better than a piece of stool. Think about that. That's actually, it should be a sannyasi's consciousness. Or anyone who wants to get out of this world. Because if you think he's, if you are thinking that something is enjoyable in this world, other than devotional service, you're going to stay here to enjoy it. That's all. You know, it's just like if you want, really want to go on vacation somewhere, then you go. And if you have enough money. Let's say you, I have one disciple in Finland, and she just saw pictures of the glaciers in Alaska. And so she, you know, her desire was there, and she went to see the glaciers, the beautiful glaciers. Big ice cubes. Isn't it? Big ice cubes in Alaska. So she went there because her desire was there. So if you have a desire to see anything, enjoy anything in this world, if anything appears enjoyable to you, or if anything appears disgusting to you, then you're not renounced from this world. It's interesting. I mean, of course, for Krishna's service, obviously, we don't see that a nice sabji and a piece of stool are the same. We offer to Krishna the nicest things in this world. That I understand. But as far as our response to different things in this material world, you know, sometimes we have the, ooh, isn't that nice response. Or sometimes we have this, ooh, yuck response. So as long as we have the uck, yuck, or the ooh response, then we have to stay here. Remember that. So, getting back to the point. So Sanatana Goswami, in this exchange with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, if I saw One thing was nice and one thing was disgusting. I wouldn't be qualified as a sannyasi. This is just not fair. And then he also said, referring to the verse today, he said, actually, when I come in contact with your body, your sores are smell like chatushima, like something like sandalwood and camphor and everything like that, because you have a spiritual body, Sanatana Goswami. So it was actually a fact. Every time Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Sanatana Goswami, there was that fragrance, aroma that came from Sanatana Goswami's body. So it's a spiritual body. Interesting, isn't it? And then, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, and this is also important as far as today's discussion, he said that to Sanatana you and Haridas Thakur, they like my children, just like a mother. She doesn't get repulsed by the stool or urine of the child in the same way. This is my affectionate relationship with both of you. So this is actually, that's an important point where I'm going to go to the next point in the class. So first of all, spiritual bodies don't smell bad. But then the point is, how can we actually tolerate the things that may smell bad in this world, or may be bad? And I'll tell another story from the Chaitanya Charitamrita to illustrate that. When Ishwara Puri was taking care of his guru, he had to clean up. I mean, his guru was like dying, feeling separation from Krishna. Obviously, when you're just like dying there, then he had to clean the guru's stool and all the other things. Clean up after the guru. I mean, just when someone's dying, anyway, you understand. There's certain things, excrement and other things that are manifesting from the body. And because of his devotion to the guru, he did not, just like the mother's devotion to the child, he did not experience that as something repulsive. So that's actually very interesting for us to learn, that if we have devotion, and not only talking about handling stool or urine or stuff like that, I mean, that's one thing. But there's other difficult things we do in this world besides handling stool and urine. There's austerities in devotional service, austerities of the mind, austerities of the body, austerities of speech, austerities of eating. You understand? Like eating the proper thing, not eating too much, or austerities of regulation, waking up early in the morning. There's all these different austerities. However, and all these things, appear to be repulsive to us. Maybe not all of us. But just like before I joined the movement, the whole idea of waking up early in the morning was so repulsive. I mean, I don't know if I like the Hare Krishna movement, but I liked chanting Hare Krishna. I was a vegetarian, following four regulated principles. But it was just like, the idea of like waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning was just like, I mean, I'd rather handle stool than wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I would rather, and what to speak of living in an ashram. In those days, people complain, they may have to live in a little shed nowadays. But in the old days, we had like 30 people living in one room that was half the size of this room. Half the size. And you just barely had room for your bed. And there was one bathroom for everybody. Can you imagine? Now we're so sophisticated, Everybody needs their own little bathroom, their own little... And we have so much furniture that if we move from one place to another, we have to hire the Mayflower Moving Company. Mayflower, you heard of this before? Or at least Truck and Movers. We have to hire, it's such an expensive deal. Or you get poor Mahamantra, to come out from the temple. who's doing all this service, and he said, come out and help me move. And the poor guy, destroys his back moving your 10,000-pound furniture. So anyway, in the old days, so getting back to the point, yeah, we still have some time. Getting to the point is that it was just so repulsive for me, just like stool, to do those things. It just went completely against my nature. And then what happened is I saw a Prabhupada. And then what was previously repulsive or, oh, heard me mention you. So what was previously something I would never do in a million years, I did because of Prabhupada. It was actually even before Prabhupada came, even Prabhupada's potency was so great that my heart became changed 1 week before Prabhupada came. You know, it didn't even take like Prabhupada's physical presence, it was the impending physical presence of Prabhupada. 1 week, and then I could feel Prabhupada's compassion, and there was love manifest in my heart, somehow or other, by Prabhupada's presence. You know, because Prabhupada's presence invokes the Bhakti Lata Beach, even the impending presence of Prabhupada. And because of that, then it wasn't difficult. The same thing that it would have been like completely hellish for me became very easy. So that's surrender. But surrender, sacrifice, austerity is not something in Krishna consciousness that is difficult, because it's done out of love. Just like I was speaking to someone who was, let's say, an impersonalist the other day, and he was telling me how his guru was making him surrender. It's actually interesting. And his guru, he had to take a vow at the time of initiation to never do any other practice, process, go to any other religion or yoga center other than what his guru is teaching. You know, such a heavy vow. I said, well, maybe your guru, I should associate with him and learn how to make my disciples take the same sort of vow. But So he's going to go to live where his guru is pretty soon, to be disciplined by the guru. And, you know, he said, this is the most difficult thing in my life, because even when I want to go surfing at 6 o'clock in the morning, I think you can understand who I'm talking about. The guru calls him up and says, what are you doing? Why are you going surfing? And he goes surfing anyway, but so it's just like a struggle. I was thinking about that. Whereas, at least my experience with serving Prabhupada, serving Prabhupada's mission, it's not a struggle. I mean, even sometimes, you know, we find that Prabhupada or Krishna want us to do things that really we didn't want to do, even, you know, after so many years in the movement. Like we were talking about the other day, like, do I really want to build another temple here, you know, at the ripe old age of 63? No. No, I just want to chant Hare Krishna every Ekadasi. I just want to take a walk, you know, just walk like 20 miles, chant 64 rounds, 120. Even, actually, it's interesting. I just found out the other day that Jagai Madai chanted 2 lakhs of rounds a day. They chanted 128 rounds a day. Jagai Madai, I'm not even half as good as them. Or 1 billionth as good as them. So, I mean, this is what I'm thinking, you know, when, oh when can that day be mine? When I can just throw my computer into the well, oh sublime, you know? You know, when I was one of the first people in the movement to get a computer, and I was thinking, this is so great, I can communicate with people all over the world. Of course, at that time, they didn't have the internet. They just had what called BBSs, bulletin board services. I said, this is amazing, wonderful. I can type and correct, you know, what, you know, because I have, sometimes I make mistakes when I type. So I can correct it without getting the whiteout of it. You know what whiteout is? You used to have this like stripper thing on the typewriters called whiteout. You just type over it and it corrects it, or you have this liquid, whiteout liquid, that you put on everything. So, Or when we were composing Prabhupada's books, you had to type with the composer, you just had to type twice. Anyways, it's a real complicated thing. It's it's hard to explain what is happening. So I was thinking, this is ecstatic. But then after 30 years or 20 years, computer, I'm thinking, you know, Krishna does that. He gives you what you want when you get it. It's like the Hebrews who were in the desert, they were asked for manna, and they had so much manna, you know, they got filled up to their heads, and they were throwing up when they didn't want any more. So Krishna does that, you know, when you want something, and then sometimes you get a new computer and you think it's, oh, it's so nice. But then you get so many headaches setting it up, and then the thing goes down. Or like our internet set system here, you think, oh, it's nice that we're all connected, and Jagat Guru had to spend half his life, you know, just correcting it when it goes down, isn't it? The material world is like that, you know, it's just like, the more you get, the more headaches you get. Anyway, so talking about, you know, so I would just like to be footloose, fancy, free, or something. But then Krishna says, well, you got to do something, you try to build me another temple, and I say no. And Krishna says yes. And I say no again. And Krishna says yes. And then I say, okay. But then when you surrender to it, it actually becomes blissful. You know, even though you're thinking, it's like going swimming, you know, you think you put your toe in the water, it's too cold for me. But when you actually dive into it, the austerity, or the so-called austerity of doing something, you know, it becomes blissful. So that's Krishna consciousness, because when something's done out of love for the Guru, love for Krishna, you know, love for Krishna, not the holy name, then even something you thought you couldn't do before, like it says by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, a blind man can see, a dog can swim an ocean, like that. So you can do things that were actually repulsive to you before because of that devotion and that love. That's really what I get out of this thing here. Not that our stool and urine becomes fragrant. You know, I still turn on the fan when I go to the restroom. But what was previously repulsive in our devotion, you know, or great austerity or difficult for us, like the whole material ocean is described, becomes shrunk to the size of a calf's or a cow's hoof print, becomes very easy by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is, what is his mercy? His mercy is bhakti, or devotion, where we have love, like the mother loving the child, etc., like that. So this is actually an important point for me here on this personal report. So any questions or comments? I think we have a long question here.
That's several questions, but I have one.
From Pani Bhushan. He writes his questions out.
Several. I have another one.
Oh my God, I don't think I have any time to read it in class. Anyway. We'll address it, and maybe we should make a whole class out of your questions here. What?
I once wondered, just out of curiosity, these verses are prose as opposed to the standards.
Poetry.
Yeah. And I was wondering if there's some underlying literary reason that's known why these particular verses and other areas of the Bhagavatam.
The fifth canto. Generous.
To prose as opposed to stanzas.
That's a good question, and you'd have to ask someone who was actually a scholar in that particular area.
Literary
scholar to answer that question.
Another question about the pastime is that these three verses. So the first one says he was abused severely. Second one was that he looked terrible, but if you looked into his eyes, he was so attractive that women were attracted to him. And this one says that he's basically advertising his presence up to 80 miles.
Yeah.
So somehow he was still attractive.
Yeah.
So, but only cultured people, that's my assumption, because he's making no effort to maintain himself. But still, his presence is known.
Well, the women were more intelligent.
So people...
Because they could appreciate him. Yeah, but the men, you know, the men couldn't just appreciate that. But the women, because they saw his beauty... So what's the question? I mean, yeah, you have all these contradictions because people react in different ways.
Yeah.
That's the point. There's different people, like I was here in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, like some people became extremely envious of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was doing his kirtan, which is extremely attractive. And they were criticizing, they were ready to call the Kazi on the mobile phone and tell the Kazi to kill him. And other people were joining in the kirtan. And other people were just curious, you know, so everybody's different in the way they react to things.
And he's creating this screen quality people. Is it the idea?
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, the people who are qualified will actually, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj do, was that we'll actually be able to understand him. So sometimes devotees do that. Because the real point, I mean, just like Jatabharata, the same thing. Jatabharata, you know, everybody thought he was just a fool and a rascal, basically. But when he spoke, King Rahugana was able to appreciate his position as a great pure devotee of the Lord. So that's the point, you know, you really understand someone by the speaking, you know. By the speaking and by their devotional activities, not by how they look.
Internally.
Not by how they look. You know, you have to see what they do. You know, because obviously Lord Vrishabhadeva was chanting the Lord's holy names and meditating on the Lord. And even Lord Nityananda, you know, he was quite extraordinary and quite controversial in many of his activities. Even Advaitacharya mentioned that on many occasions. He would, when Advaitacharya would regularly have fights with Lord Nityananda, of course it's all playful stuff. No one should take sides in these fights. And he would say, you know, who knows your caste? Who knows where you came from? You're a crazy person. I become crazy just by coming in contact with you. So, I mean, it took some spiritual insight to be able to understand who Lord Nityananda was or what his position was. And that's sort of like screening. Another example we often give is the covering or the veneer of yogamaya on the holy dham to protect it from the rascals. Like, let's say you go to Vrindavan, and what do you see? What does an ordinary person see? Open sewers, pigs, monkeys, people trying to take your money in the name of being holy men, right? I mean, so this is a veneer arranged by the yogamaya potency of the Lord. And Krishna himself in the Gita says, Naham prakasya sarvasya, yogamaya samavrata. For those who are fools and rascals, I am not revealed to them, but covered by my eternal deluding potency, yogamaya. So this is, you know, Krishna's, you just can't enter the holy dham by taking a train or taking a plane or going somewhere geographically. You have to have the right consciousness or else all you'll see is the outside thing. Even materially, like the scientists, they go to the so-called moon, they can't enter into the atmosphere. All they see is just some stones. Or Mars, for example, with this big rover they have, the Curiosity. Curiosity killed the cat. So, you know, all they see is the external thing, but there's many things on higher dimensional levels that are happening there. Like if you actually saw the real Vrindavan when you went to Vrindavan, I mean, you would see something completely amazing. You'd see touchstones and all sorts of crystal bridges across Radhakund. But you don't see that. So that's Krishna protecting, shielding his devotees and the holy dham from the eyes of the rascals. You have to be qualified. Latakshi Krishna Namadi Navabait Graham Indriyat. Seva mukehi jivado svayamevas parachita. No one can perceive the Lord or his devotees through these mundane senses. Namadi. But seva mukehi jivado, if you engage in this preaching of Krishna consciousness, I mean seva, if you serve using your tongue, not just eating, but if you serve using your tongue, svayamevas parachita, it will be revealed to you. That's the point. So we engage in this preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it's revealed. Without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can never see Vrindavan. There's no question of understanding or seeing Vrindavan without Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, and many of the Babaji's, they think they can understand Vrindavan without Lord Chaitanya. Not possible. Not possible. Without Lord Chaitanya and disciplic succession coming from Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's present day representative. So, any other questions or comments? We have about 1/2 a second.
I bought a BB bottle that I filled in the Ganges.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, after like 3-4 days, any kind of water I put in this bottle because I've been drinking from it.
Yeah.
Not that Ganges water, but I've been drinking other one. It usually stinks. Yesterday, that was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, I smelled it and it smells perfectly right.
Oh, good.
And it's still, so I don't know, it's like the dead bodies are not pure, but the water is still. Yeah.
All I know is that there's a higher incidence of cancer and other diseases along the bank of the Ganges. Because there's other things, chemicals too.
Yeah, it's not that the chemicals that they pour in there.
Yeah, there's carcinogenic chemicals in there too. Yeah. I mean, the Ganges purifies things, that's true. It's antiseptic, it's aseptic, just like cow manure is. But there's certain things floating in there. I mean, if you have arsenic in there, you know, I'd be real careful. I'd just be real careful about dealing things because in Kali Yuga things do get polluted. And then, you know, anyway, these are statistics of people living along the banks of the Ganges, and the Jamuna is not even Jamuna water anymore.
Yeah.
Not even a drop of it. All right. On that happy note...